Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Tuesday, the 18th of July. I'm Jen Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo, and we are also live on Facebook.
Yes, coming up on today's program, countdown. As Kenyans warm up for the general election due next month, authorities warn of a possible shutdown of social media.
We're not going to negotiate the stability of the country and we'll not negotiate the peace, but we need to conduct these elections. Action will be taken.
And we'll bring you reactions on that story right after this.
President Salva Kiir declares a state of emergency in some states in the western part of the country.
This declaration is aimed at giving the state authorities, including the police, more powers to deal with the cases of increasing insecurity in the area.
All that and a lot more coming up shortly, so stay tuned.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Russian-backed rebels in East Ukraine have announced the creation of a new state, to be known as Malorossiya, or Little Russia. Representatives from the self-declared People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk in East Ukraine said they had plans to hold a referendum on the prospect, stating that the new state would aspire to include not only the areas under current insurgent control, but also the rest of Ukraine. The Kremlin is yet to respond to the announcement. The idea has meanwhile been rejected by the international community. A Turkish court has ruled that six people, including a German human rights consultant and an Amnesty International director, will remain behind bars in Turkey for the duration of their pre-trial detention. German human rights trainer Peter Steutner was taken into custody on July 5th alongside İdil Eser, the director of Amnesty International Turkey, while they were attending a workshop on digital safety. Amnesty has called the decision a crushing blow for human rights, as all six activists face charges relating to terrorism. South Africa commemorates late President Nelson Mandela's birthday today. People from all walks of life volunteer their service to their communities for 67 minutes on Mandela Day, in honor of the 67 years that Mandela spent fighting for social justice. At least 1,000 people are expected to gather in Cape Town in remembrance of the leader South Africans often refer to by his clan name, Madiba. But the day also draws critical voices, such as ousted Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan, who said that the government under Jacob Zuma should be ashamed of itself for failing to uphold Madiba's legacy.
Madiba was a unique figure who could uphold his own sense of dignity and self-respect. He had a sense of purpose, and that purpose was non-negotiable. We must ask, how many leaders do we have who have a non-negotiable purpose? So, for a country that has produced a Madiba, we should be ashamed of ourselves in terms of how we are attempting to conduct ourselves in leadership terms today.
You're listening to DW News. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has declared a three-month state of emergency in his home state, where clashes have raged on for months between clan-based militias. The military will apparently be given powers to stop the fighting in Gogrial State, as certain rights will be suspended there. South Sudan descended into civil war in December 2013, with violence between soldiers and militia costing tens of thousands of lives. There'll be more about this on the show later. And in sports news, senior vice president of FIFA, Angel Maria Villar, has been arrested on corruption charges, along with his son. The charges against Villar relate to the alleged embezzlement of funds as well as international match fixing. And for more news and information, please go to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson for DW News.
You're listening to Africa Link on DW with me, Jen Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Last year, as Uganda held presidential elections, the internet was shut down. The same thing happened in Ethiopia, Burundi, DRC, and several other countries. Authorities have often justified the shutdown by citing national security while blaming the use of social media to spread fake election results. With just 3 weeks to the national elections in Kenya, authorities have threatened to shut down social media during the election period. And that's not all. They've also issued a stern warning to internet users to refrain from using the facility to announce election results. James Shimanyula brings us that report.
Observers have warned of possible violence in the forthcoming elections. Kenyans are known to be active on social media. The platform is already awash with what the government classifies as comments leaning on ethnic lines. Kenya's newly appointed Interior Minister, Fred Matiang'i, says they would not hesitate to shut down the media in case it is a threat to the country's security.
We're not going to negotiate the stability of the country and will not negotiate the peace that we need to conduct these elections. Action will be taken, and whoever commits crime, regardless of their level in the society, their status or whatever they do, will be apprehended promptly and dealt with firmly. We will not depart from that path. The law protects us. The law requires us to do that.
National Cohesive and Integration Commission Chairman Francis Ole Kaparo is in charge of the commission formed to monitor hate speech and incitement after post-election violence a decade ago killed more than 1,000 people. Kaparo says they will crack down on irresponsible internet users.
There are terrible people in social media who are hell-bent on causing unnecessary anxiety across the country. We are coming for you because we must save this country. We are having a major crackdown on those who misuse social media. They will be shut out. That is my son. I believe that is what ought to be.
Kenya's Communication Authority is tracking down words on social media that are likely to lead to incitement and violence. The chairman, Francis Wangusi.
There is nowhere where you can avatar yourself, even in social media, without us physically tracing where you are. So we have that capability. The internet is up and running for Kenyans. But don't misuse it as a platform of conveying your own results.
But activists like Abdurrahman Masumbuko have a different opinion.
Kenyans should be given chance to follow what is happening rather than shutting down the whole thing. So I think government should be wise on this.
Ordinary Kenyans have mixed reactions on the government's threat to shut down social media.
I'm sure they've probably learned a lesson then. From then, that's why they're considering doing something like that.
I really don't understand why, actually, they would do it. Because if there is a particular blog having propaganda, they should block this particular person, not everybody else, because not everybody else is going to be using these tools in a negative way. So anybody going totally out of this should be blocked, yes.
James Manula filed that report. And Crispin, elections in Africa today attract a lot of conversation in social media.
Exactly. When it comes to internet, especially on social media, that's a huge, huge topic. And we asked our users on social media whether they are in favor or against banning social media and the internet during elections.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Odhiambo says, I am totally against it. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, which is responsible for coordinating the elections, also have a Facebook page and a Twitter handle. I'm thinking it will be very important for them to share updates via these platforms, since not every Kenyan owns a radio or television, which is quite true, and I agree with him there. They have been doing that before, even when it is not in an election season. The government needs to stop doing things that create fear and doubts amongst the people.
And also from Kenya, Daniel Wanyama says, yes, I think this is very necessary. It must be shut down.
Olorutimi from Lagos, Nigeria says, it is a two-edged sword. Stopping the internet during these periods can drastically reduce hate speeches and incitement, but great for immediate information sharing, to know hotspots in terms of safety, and to send out results as soon as each ward's ballots have been counted, so no tampering with figures in transit between ward and the Central Electoral Commission. That is for the accountability purpose. So weighing the pros and cons, he says, I favour letting the internet be.
Interesting comments there. We shall certainly get back to those comments if time allows. But first to the US, where Republicans' effort to repeal and replace Obamacare have failed as two more Republican senators oppose the legislation, which is strongly backed by the President Donald Trump. Several Republicans have expressed concern that the new bill could lead to millions losing coverage and slash on Medicaid, a health insurance coverage for the poor and the disabled. But Trump has vowed to press ahead. How much of a setback is this for the Trump administration? Bestie Limbegler works for U.S. healthcare policy at the JF Kennedy Institute in Berlin. She spoke to DW's Amrita Shema.
It's a huge setback. This is the second major failure in a few months. Donald Trump's approval ratings are also the lowest of any president in history at this point in time in his presidency. And this failure came again from his own party. And so it's really showing again and again that repealing Obamacare, this major campaign promise of his, is not as easy as it looks, and it's not happening. So it's a major setback.
Deep divisions within the country over this issue, but what does this mean now for Donald Trump's attempts to repeal Obamacare? That had been a huge and very key election pledge he'd made.
Well, there is a chance that he'll just try it again. There have been many senators, Republican senators, who have said, again, it's dead for now. The attempt doesn't work now, but it's not the end. So we might see more attempts, but without bipartisan support, so without working with Democrats and working with the opposition, it's really difficult to say that anything's going to happen with this.
So the politics will be key because, as you mentioned, Donald Trump is facing opposition within his own party.
Absolutely. There are Republicans on all ends of the spectrum, and there are some Republicans who are thinking for their constituents and who realize that a Republican bill that takes away health insurance is not good for their constituents. It's not good for who they're representing. And there are others who think that we need to go even farther, repeal it, and then find us something that will be a solution. So a lot of discord.
Bestie Limbegler of JF Kennedy Institute in Berlin. Now, in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir has declared a three-month state of emergency in his home state and the entire western region following clashes, clan-based militia that have raged for months. According to South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwe, the army will be given powers to stop the fighting. I've been speaking to DW's Wake Simon Wudu in Jumba, and I started by asking him just how serious the problem was.
A state of emergency was declared there because of continuing and increasing violence and conflicts, especially intertribal conflicts. These are conflicts among communities in those areas, cattle rustlers. So according to the Deputy Minister of Information, this order or this declaration is aimed at giving the state authorities, including the police, more powers to especially calm down or deal with the cases of increasing insecurity in the area.
Now, from what we gather, citizens' rights would be suspended, but the presidency has not announced which rights would exactly be curtailed. Why has this been left hanging?
Citizens' rights will be violated, like, for example, rights to movement and to even socialize. The order probably, let me say, gives more powers to the police and other state actors. There are also fears that, you know, considering responses of the security actors on calls by the government as far as such cases are concerned, chances are that they can even mistreat civilians and mishandle them. And there are even fears that seriously there are a lot of rights abuses that may result from this order, considering how the security actors do handle such kind of cases when it comes to state of emergency.
This is a result of continued fighting between clan-based militia that has left many people dead. What exactly are these people fighting for?
One, first of all, before even the outbreak of fighting in late 2013, which was so political, there were clashes among communities. And these clashes are basically between cattle keepers who fight each other, trying to raid cattle from each other. And this is one case. But the other case is that also the current political conflict, which broke out since late 2013, in those areas, there are groups of the opposition fighters aligned to former First Vice President Riek Machar that do clash with the government forces once in a while in some of these areas.
Wake Simon Wudu, bringing us up to date with the state of emergency in South Sudan.
And living in South Sudan, today is Mandela Day. And take a listen to this audio message from Godfrey Akpalu in Ghana.
Mandela is a great man. He's one of Africa good leaders. I support him. I wish him May perfect rest in peace. Amen.
Voice message there from Godfred Akpalu in Ghana on Mandela Day.
Yes, and you're still listening to Africa Link. This is Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko Kemet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo, and we are live also on Facebook. So do keep those comments coming in.
Yes. Still to come, the Margi community in Nigeria's Borno State petition acting president over new abductions.
And we also have comments on Mandela Day as South Africans remember the anti-apartheid icon.
Yes. Now, the Margi community in Borno State have petitioned acting president Yemi Osinbajo over the abduction of 14 women along Maiduguri Domboa Road by Boko Haram last month. This comes a day after the insurgents released a video showing the abducted women. They were abducted along with the Nigerian police on the way to the barrio of the late police sergeant Rahila Anyatakiria in Lasa Askira. Muhammad Alamin with that report.
It is now a month since Boko Haram insurgents ambushed over 60 personnel of the police mobile force and mourners on the Maiduguri Domboa highway, but locals say little has been done to trace them. The Nigerian police have refuted claim that the police officers had been killed or abducted by the terror group. Elders of the community have now called on the acting president, Professor Yemi Osinbajo, to do everything possible to rescue the women. They say the whereabouts of the women remain a mystery, and the Borno State Police Command and other security forces are yet to offer any clarification on the issue. Madbukar is the eldest spokesman.
There is problem with this abduction. Until today, the police and other security agencies are still silent on this burning issue. With the parents, husbands, and indeed entire Magi community of Askira Uba local government area are now in trauma waiting anxiously to know why we are being treated like that.
For the parents like John Gundia, the pain is too much to bear.
The abducted women belong to the same family. 3 out of 14 are my daughters. We are appealing to the government to do everything possible to rescue them and bring them back home. For over 1 month, we don't know the situation of our daughters.
Abubakar Baba, a political analyst, says the government and the security agencies are playing with the people's lives and should help locate the abducted women.
Still, the Boko Haram insurgents are still kidnapping and attacking the innocent citizens of this country. In fact, something needs to be done urgently on this issue. The life of citizens of Nigeria is not safe. Federal government needs to intervene in this issue, definitely.
Muhammad Alamin with that report.
And just to remind you, in case you're joining us on Facebook Live, we are there and you can share your comments on the stories that we are currently broadcasting. Sunday James just joined in, and Nuruddin Mohammed also says, thanks DW for, of course, transmitting and streaming live on Facebook.
Yes.
Africa on the move.
Football. A game that makes the whole world rumble. Hands up, feet kicking, yet kicking no ball, and cheers. And it's often much fun for the viewers. But what about the man behind the ball? With names like Aubameyang, Didier Drogba, and Solomon Kalou, many young Africans dream of a football career and playing for the big European clubs. But what is the road like to being a famous footballer? Yulia Heinrichmann met some of Africa's aspiring footballers, and her report is now presented by Zipporah Nyambura.
Many young Africans dream of a football career and wonderful contract with a European club. But this is only a wish. Not many realize this. Oftentimes, they are lured by scrupulous people only to end up in misery. The lucky ones are at the mercy of the clubs. Their residence permits depend on the contract they have. Baki Kone was once a successful African footballer. He played for Olympic Marseille, Paris, and Qatar. He knows what it takes to get there and the challenges young Africans face trying to make a football career.
We all want to go to Europe.
We watch the games, we see our friends and brothers leave, and we all hope that one day we can go to Europe to play football there. But it's not easy, especially for an African.
Pone has since returned to Ivory Coast and works at Solbeni Football Academy, a place that made him what he is today. Here he coaches young footballers and gives them advice on how to make it to top clubs. Kone scouts his players from all walks of life, including street children, whom he offers free training lessons, including normal schooling. Many parents have high hopes in the children, says Omar Diakite, one of the aspiring footballers.
They are proud. They are happy to have their child attend one of the best football centers in Africa. They always encourage me when I return home over the weekend. I have the backing of my whole family. They are very satisfied with me.
And for Osineu, the European dream is all he thinks about.
If a club wants me, I would leave immediately. That's all I want. It would be the best thing to play in Europe. Becoming a famous footballer is my dream.
Baki Kone knows how much pressure families put on their children. But most importantly, he wants to protect them from rogue middlemen. Although the transfer of underage players is illegal, these go-betweens often find loopholes. For example, by passing the players off as students. Baki Kone has first-hand experience. People calling themselves agents lure young players to Europe without proper contracts. Around 3,000 young footballers are estimated to be living illegally in the suburbs of Paris.
They are then left on their own. They stay in Europe because they do not want to come back. They are ashamed, and also, because they have made it to Europe, they would rather look for another job and stay there.
He hopes that won't happen to these young players. Many are keen to go to Europe as soon as possible. Baki Kone wants to protect them from an uncertain future.
A report by Yulia Henrichman.
And we have that video on our Facebook page on the Ivorians dreaming of a soccer career in Europe. And its young boss says, yeah, let our dreams come true. And Juan Ino Mukimwa says, good move for the Ivorian player who's come back to help the youngsters there.
Good luck to all of them.
Focus Europe.
Sweden is on the course to becoming the first country in the world to go completely cash-free. Never mind that it was the first European country to introduce banknotes in 1661. Now the Scandinavian country has almost done away with notes and coins. John Lawrenson went to Stockholm to witness a land with no cash and filed this report.
Hi there.
In an organic supermarket with a packet of nuts and a banknote.
No cash?
Many shops and cafes now refuse cash. You can't use cash on trams or buses. Actual money is even becoming rare in banks. 900 of Sweden's 1,600 high street banks don't do cash. The Riksbank, Sweden's central bank, says cash is now used in fewer than 2% of transactions and should disappear altogether by 2030, which for some is just not soon enough. The ABBA Museum, where some idiot, all right, it's me, is up on the stage singing with holograms of the group. Ever since his son was the victim of a nasty robbery, ABBA's guitar player-songwriter Bjorn has been championing the abolition of cash. So when he opened this museum with its hotel, restaurant and shop, he made it all cash-free and passed on his passion to its CEO, Joanna Madsen.
I haven't had any cash for at least 2 or 3 years. You know, you can buy everything through your phone, and I do Swish.
Tell us what Swish is.
It's you transferring your money through phone numbers. You connect a certain bank account to a certain cell phone number.
Even street musicians and beggars have started using this Swedish app. They write their phone number on a piece of cardboard so that passers-by can make donations. Another Swedish invention is a credit card terminal that fits onto your phone that's popular with street vendors. But some Swedes are unimpressed by all of this modernity.
Great, thank you very much.
I take a taxi, paid for by credit card, of course, to meet another Swede called Bjorn. Bjorn Eriksson is the head of Cash Uprising, a group campaigning for the right to use cash. He's the former head of the Swedish police and Interpol. Eriksson says the end of cash would leave those who control its replacement with a monopoly.
The private big banks are doing their best to kill the possibility to use cash. And the reason is very simple, they don't earn money on cash. And as quick as you have a monopoly, you're going to increase the card fees.
So I go to the Riksbank, in charge of issuing the krona notes and coins Swedish people use, where I'm led to the bright and gigantic office of its deputy governor, Cecilia Skingsley. And there's a still more fundamental problem. This is my party trick, says the deputy governor of the Bank of Sweden, pulling a banknote and her debit card out of her purse.
So this is two different versions of money. When I hold a note, it's a claim on the central bank. It's the safest liquid asset you can carry. But money can also be accessible through my bank debit card.
And so with the card, it's a claim on your on a private bank?
Yes.
That's, and therefore more risky because the bank could go bankrupt? And
we have a lot of rules and regulations and supervision in order that it shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. But we know from history that it can happen. Mm-hmm. And if you have a situation where cash has been completely phased out of society, then I think a lot of people will wake up and say, what happened to my possibilities of having a claim on the central bank?
To fill the gap, the Riksbank is working on the introduction of what it calls e-krona, money that will be in digital form, like the money on your debit card, but which, like cash, will be a claim on the central bank. The last stop, perhaps, before cash disappears altogether.
John Larenson with that very interesting report from Sweden.
Right. As we mentioned earlier, Jekos, today South Africans are marking Mandela Day. And it is a day in which they usually dedicate 67 minutes
yes.
of their time to help the needy.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to how Baron Gwaze from Harare remembers Nelson Mandela.
Okay.
I think it's not noble because Mandela did not change South Africa, did not bring the free economical freedom and financial freedom to the black South Africans. He just became a representative of the black among the white leadership.
So as you can see, Ayeko, not everyone agrees with this impression that Nelson Mandela was...
He's such an icon.
Exactly. There are those that are, you know, there's some who disagree with
yeah.
that view of him.
There are always two sides of the coin anyway.
Exactly. Another comment from Aremu Isiaka says, I'm of the opinion that South Africa is losing that Madiba legacy, especially as bequeathed to the ANC. In my opinion, he says, the only way I can think as the way forward is of the ANC is challenged. Bashiru Bode from Nigeria also says Madiba Mandela remained our greatest hero in Africa. We remember you with a great sense of humility. We wish you well in the land of spirits.
Yeah, that's a very interesting comment too, and a very interesting message to end comments on Nelson Mandela. I certainly know that there are quite lots of them, but we also have lots of interesting things for our
listeners.
Right,
let's talk about monkey business.
Yes.
An overly inquisitive baboon has triggered a power cut in a Zambian town near Victoria Falls. The animal suffered an electric shock, but... guess what? It survived the incident that experts say would have killed a human being.
Yes. Probably there's some scientific explanation there.
Yeah, but interestingly, but I don't know how it managed to survive. I mean, electrocution.
It was able to anyway. Survive the shocks.
Mubanga,
me and you would have died probably.
Right. Mubanga Shelley says, I'm told it was a certain named chief who turned into a baboon.
Okay.
No, this is not the African, you know, black magic voodoo thing.
I've been talking about voodoo because I'm looking at that and I'm just seeing this comment coming in from Isaac Ehosa who says, please, oh please, voodoo at work.
Voodoo at work, exactly. And Freddie C. Friday says it was trying to kill itself. As you know, things are difficult in Zambia, even for the animals.
Interesting. And Katabazi Mugisha says, she or he, this one is even questioning the sex of the animal, she or he got electrocuted and simply walked away with it.
Tuambo Siloka Siloka says, it is unfortunate the baboon has been politicized, people claiming it is part of the largest opposition party despite the political situation in Zambia.
Not a pleasant comment there, but let's wind it up with one from Martin Dungu who says, he's such a monkey, enough of this monkey business. Yes, Crispin. Exactly. Indeed, enough of this monkey business. But let's just have one quick one on Kenyan story, please.
Yes, Kenyans, as you know, there was a story that the country was threatening to ban the internet. And another comment here coming from John from Nairobi, he says, on today's newspaper, they said they won't shut down the internet, but will heavily monitor the conversations.
Yes, and we leave it at that, Crispin. Unless you want to keep our listeners informed, they can always continue on our Facebook book. From me, Jen Ayeka Kume, that's all we had.
And I'm Crispin Mohideo. Thanks for joining us.
And we'll be here tomorrow same time. Have a nice day.